Thank you. Hi, y'all. So great to be back in the South where English language is spoke proper. I got to tell you something. I don't know if those music people are back in here or not, but somebody can get the word to them. That's about the best Sunday morning worship I've ever heard. Whoa. That turned me every way but loose. I tell you, I try not to cry, but I'm afraid I'd look ugly. It's all right, you can laugh. I like that feasting, fasting thing. Lord said that to me too, so I ate fast. Oh, you are a happy crowd this morning. This is a great church, you guys. I hope you know what a wonderful impact you're having on the entire state and around the country. Your pastor and I have been friends a long time, and I think he is just the apex of pastoring. He has the vision, and he has the people around him to make it happen, and then to see you and following that great leadership. This is really a super day for me. I feel wonderful. I didn't have much sleep yesterday when I spoke, and I can't remember what I said, but I'm back awake this morning, and boy, it's really been a wonderful year for our ministry and for our team. We've been around the world in ministry to our troops and throughout Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, Iraq, and then throughout the hospitals where our troops are recovering from devastating injuries. The body armor is great to protect the vital organs, and it's saving thousands and thousands of lives, but they're losing their limbs, and it just hurts so bad to walk into their rooms and see them all strung up, and it brings back a lot of memories, I have to be honest with you. And I have a little more difficulty going to the burn ward, but I do, and I don't hesitate. It's just difficult, but I don't shrink from it because I know what it meant to me to have people come. And had a wonderful Air Force pilot who had gone through a devastating crash in his fighter jet and was terribly burned, and he came to my bed, and I never will forget him. He was in his full dress uniform and sharp as a tack, but he had no face and he had no fingers. But when he walked up to my bed and he said to me, he said, "Sailor, you're strong and you're going to make it." And he snapped me a salute without those fingers. And I tried to salute him, but I couldn't get my hand to my head. And I never forgot it. Never. I was surrounded by people who gave me memories. One was the most wonderful African-American man. He was 6'7", 350 pounds, and his arms literally were bigger than my legs. He was just massive. And he played for the Dallas Cowboys, but not on the playing field. On the practice field he played, and he was the whole front line, I think, for them to work out against. And he was a male nurse and just had the most gentle touch and a precious man. And his name was Rosie. Rosie, that was his name. 350 pounds of Rosie. You'll never forget it. He had a big tattoo on his arm. It was just amazing. And they came to take me to debridement. That's when they put you in the water and splash water up on you, and then they rip your skin off. They literally skin you alive. And if you've been burned, you know what I'm talking about. It's the thing you lay awake all night knowing it's coming the next morning. You can't go to sleep because you know the pain's going to be something you can't talk about. There are no words. It's not that you couldn't talk about it. It's just that if there were words to say it, and there aren't. Well, the first day they did that, I thought I had known pain from being burned, but what they did in that tank hurt worse than ever being burned. And Rosie came that next morning, the second day, and he pushed the gurney back and the nurses, and he put his big old forklift arms under me and picked me up. He personally carried me down that hall and put me in that water, and they proceeded to continue to skin me alive. This has to go on many times until they get all the skin off of you that's dead. And it continues to die, so it doesn't just stop when they get skin off one day and think, oh, they got it all off. Well, some more dies the next day. But they were in there skinning me. I look over, and there's big old arms, and that little rose on that arm was flexing as Rosie was weeping, praying for me, standing over against that door sill. And I said to myself, you know, if he cares that much, I'm going to get through this. And he carried me back to put me in my bed, and I'm still dripping wet and just in pain I can't describe. And he kept saying to me over and over, walking back, he said, "You'll be fine, big man. You'll see. You'll be fine." And I looked up in his face, and tears were running down that beautiful ebony skin, reflecting from those tears that looked like fire would sparkle off of the lights reflecting. And it was like an angel carried me that day. He got me in my bed and pulled those big, huge arms out and reached up. And I had a little tuft of hair left. And he pushed that little hair back, bent down, and kissed my forehead. And he looked me right in the eyes and he said, "You'll be fine, big man. You'll see." I'm fine. Because somebody believed in me. Somebody was there when I needed them most. That's what Christianity is all about. I never knew what happened to Rosie, but I got a feeling when I get to heaven, this angel with a rose on his arms will come up laughing at me, saying, "You're fine, big man." Now, here I went and got all emotional. Can't do that on Sunday morning, can we? Who needs hairspray, huh? I'm 58 years old as of last 2 weeks ago, whatever. I've never had more fun in my life than I'm having serving Jesus today. It's so fun being saved. I've been on a tour this last week with the U.S. Air Force, and I'm speaking to military bases all over the United States. And I've just fallen in love with the military since 9/11. I slammed my hand in my fist. I said, "God, don't you leave me out of this war." Every time I saw those repeats of that horrific day in New York and at the Pentagon, I went ballistic. I remember turning around, I screamed at my wife and said, "I need an M16. She said, "You need to sit down before you have a stroke. I've got this really practical wife. Thank God, or I'd been dead a long time ago." I'm like the redneck. His last four words were, "Hey, y'all, watch this." That's just about what I am, you know. I don't live on the edge. I am the edge, I think. Oh, Lord. But boy, I just got so upset. And I got, at the end of 2 weeks, I had 20 military installations calling saying, "We need you to bring your story to our troops and encourage them. We know we're going to go to war. Let's start now to get their mindset that they can make it no matter what they face." And I said, "I'll do it. I just got one question. Have you got an M16? They said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, bring it. You bring the M16 and I'll bring the John 3:16 and we'll go fight the Taliban together." And so we did. And I ended up over in the Middle East ministering to our troops. And I'm headed back again right after the first of the year. So I would like to know that if I come to your mind during the next months after January, after the first of the year, I hope you'll pray for me. But I brought some pictures I thought you'd like. Just real quick, we'll show them, okay? There's a terrible price to be paid, though. And there it is. And I think you and I both know that we're sitting in this room today free without Taliban rolling hand grenades down this aisle or Al-Qaeda driving up in truck bombs, because these people have put their life between us and those who would murder us. And my prayer is that this church will be leading the way, Gateway. You'll lead the way in the Metroplex to pray for the troops and remind this community and all of our nation that we owe them a debt. And we will never be able to pay it all back. God bless them. Amen. Amen. I went up into Crete and I took a picture of what I had not seen in Vietnam. I took a picture of a chaplain in a war zone. And not that the chaplains weren't in Vietnam, but they weren't permitted to come where we were. Not a chaplain came in the entire 8 months I was in that jungle. I didn't get a preacher, pastor, teacher. I didn't even get Bob Hope or the Dallas cheerleaders, and I would have remembered them. This guy's out there where they are. This is Tikrit. That's the hole that Saddam was brought out of the day before this picture was taken. It's an amazing experience to be with our military and to see our chaplains at work. We have the greatest chaplains in the history of our military today. And God bless our chaplains. Amen. Well, they brought an M16. There it is. These are the guys that drive the convoy and the vehicles that I travel in when I'm on the ground. Most of my time's in Black Hawk helicopters, but this is with the most wonderful young men that I tell you, and not 1 second did they hesitate to put their life on the line to protect me. Next shot. This is a wonderful new friend I made over there. He is absolutely a spectacular Christian, just loves Jesus, flies that magnificent machine sitting there behind us. He gave me a grease pencil and wrote on it. He said, "Write a message on this bomb to Osama." And I did. And I hope he gets it. That's not nice in church, I bet, but oh well. This picture is wonderful for what you can't see, and I apologize they wouldn't let the camera take the picture the other direction in a very secured area. But I had 1,000 men in that room with me, and 350 gave their heart to Jesus in that town in Iraq. Isn't that wonderful? This is on the way back. This is actually in a C-130. These four magnificent human beings. I tell you, every time I look at them, I just have to fight the tears back. They bring home our dead. They bring home the war heroes that have given their lives for our country. And in flight back to IUD Qatar from Baghdad, we took this picture. I just wanted to have that picture. Here's what CNN won't show you. That precious lady looking straight into the eyes of that soldier saying thank you. You will not see that on CNN. It may not be a big parade, but in the mind of that woman, she's got her life on the line. Just do that, because you never know when one of those stinking Al-Qaeda or some Saddam loyalist or foreign fighter will see her do that. But you look in the background, they're all saying thank you. They're all smiling. And there's a reason why I'm excited about our men and women serving us, because the next picture will show you the future of Iraq. Right there it is. And they're going to hear about Jesus because of our troops giving those people freedom to live their life. God bless the children of Iraq. Aren't they beautiful? Look at that. This is one of Saddam's 74 palaces built with food for friend, oil for friend, food, whatever. I preached in that castle or whatever you'll call it. I preached in it, and we baptized them and the kids that gave the heart to Christ, we baptized them in Saddam's swimming pool. Just turned it into a baptism. Isn't that cool? This is at the hospital at the Green Zone. More about this later. But the man on the left is Colonel Carver, one of the most outstanding chaplains, and was over all of the chaplains throughout the entire country of Iraq in the Army. God bless him and the other chaplain as well. She flies that thing. That's an Apache. No, not her. The helicopter is an Apache helicopter. I don't know what she is. She's beautiful, I'll tell you that. Most wonderful lady, but I can't remember her name because I gave her a new name. Now, remember, she flies that Apache helicopter. No wonder Saddam gave up. We sent our women. I figured out when we got a real war, we put our women out there. She flies that thing. I called her Captain Casey. KC, killer chick. She liked that, so she kept it. I'm sorry to be this ego, ladies and gentlemen, forgive me, but I just had to slip that one in. That's me in a U-2 spy plane. They told me, you can sit there, but don't touch anything red. I didn't even lay my head back. But if you don't talk ego, you'll like the next picture. Oh, Lord. You know what? That is Saddam's throne, his crown, and his sword, and I sat there grinning like a possum. What's beautiful is, now, you got to know, that throne was built. He was going to send it to Jerusalem when he conquered Israel. And he would rule the world, he said, from that throne. I sat on that throne and said, Jesus rules this world and he's Lord over Iraq. Give the Lord a clap off him this morning. Oh, man. Well, it's kind of fun to do that. And you got to understand that for me, it's beyond fun. This is like, I'm on a mission, you know. It's not to be sitting on Saddam's throne. I sat on his toilet, too. It's a big deal, you know. It's solid gold. You would, too, just for the fun of it. I mean, man's got to do what a man's got to do. You know what I'm saying? But it was such an important part of my life, because I honestly felt, as Esther, spoken to by Mordecai, who knows, but what you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this. And I'm saying to you, God didn't blow me up in Vietnam. He didn't shoot me. He didn't burn me. But he didn't stop it from happening, because he had a bigger picture in mind. And he knew that I could relate to those troops hurt better than if I'd never been hurt. Again, God didn't do it. Say this with me. God does not do evil. Say it. God does not do evil. Sometimes he doesn't stop things from happening to us because he wants to trust us with it. He's trusting you with something. And he allows you to go through certain things in life so that you can become a living witness to those around you who are going through the same problem. This summer, I ended up losing my entire colon. It was shocking. Not this summer, but a year ago this summer. And I lost 6 feet of intestine. I said, well, Lord, I'm just a gutless preacher now. Yeah, I never had anything I can't have. Everything happened to me is on the outside. But the doctor said it was a mastoid malignancy and I was going to die, and scared my wife to death. And I said, I'm not going to die. And he said, you are going to die. And Brenda said, well, are you going to die? I said, no. She said, well, how do you know? I said, because I'm not. And she said, well, they have an education. I said, whose side are you on? Well, they ended up taking out the colon. The doctor said, the good news is you'll never die of colon cancer. Oh, wow. And you think sometimes you've been through enough bad luck, you got nothing but good luck left. Well, it's not luck. It has nothing to do with luck. Read what's left of these lips. Life is not fair. That's not even a question. The question in life is, how are you going to deal with it? That's the big question. How are you going to deal with it? You're going to go through life hating God, shaking your fist in his face. Why me, God? What if he answered you? I don't know, Bill. There's something about you I don't like. Sorry, Bill. I was trying to hit your wife, but you moved. God is not evil. You said it and you believe it, don't you? So God takes tragedy and turns it into triumph. And whatever you go through in your life, God can use it if you'll surrender it to him. And I did. And I started out with no problems, to be honest with you, other than the fact that my mom was very invalid. But personally, I was in good health and I had no problems. But I watched my mother suffer and I never saw her ever blame God. Even when so-called smart Christians, and I'm saying so-called smart because they're children in here and you're not supposed to use some words. But I have words for Christians that do this. They came up to my mom and said, repent and God will heal you. It's like you're sick and God's punishing you. That's the most godly woman I ever knew. I had one group of guys get up and walk out while I was speaking. They were from a particular school of thought. They got up and walked out while I was preaching. And on the way out, the last guy turned around and said, get the sin out of your life. God, take those scars off your face. I was stunned. My knees buckled. If I hadn't had a podium, I would have fallen down. And the Lord just spoke to me and said, well, if I did that to you because you sinned, why did they crucify Jesus? Jesus was crucified because I sinned, and he paid it all, and God doesn't have any responsibility to take it out on me. Jesus already paid for it. Do you believe that? Say amen. And that thought just hit me so hard as the guy walked out. Was too late. I could have nailed that sucker with the love of Jesus right there, man. He was out before I could catch him. God does not do evil. He's not out to hurt you. And God did not wound me in Vietnam. That's war and that's life. I grew up without that kind of stress, without pain in my life. Fell in love at 16, asked her to marry me. I did. I asked her to marry me when I was 16, my high school sweetheart. She slapped me. She's 13. I said, but you have the body of a 14-year-old. I thought that was good, but she slapped me again. And she said, if you love me, you'll wait for me. I said, I love you. And I waited for her. I said, I'll pick you up at 10. But I knew what she meant. And I'm saying this for all the young people in the house. We got married. We were both virgin. You can clap. All right. That's part one. Part two is 37 years later, we're still married. You thought I was going to say virgin, didn't you? I could see it. Oh, you did too. You thought it. Well, I got news for you. I got two kids and I got four grandkids. And aren't grandkids awesome? They're God's reward for not killing your kids. My little granddaughter sat in my lap and squeezed this mutilated old face in her tiny fingers. And she said, Papa, which is Southern speak for mighty man of war, holy man of God. I knew you knew that, but I wanted to remind you. She said, Papa, and I said, what, little angel? And loving music like she does, she'd already learned this song. It's one of the favorite love songs of all time. She sang to me, holding my face, you are so beautiful to me. And she bounced to give my bridle. Can't you see? I couldn't see. I was crying and blowing snot bubbles. You know what? May not sound like it has a lot to do with you, but if I can model for you this morning, I want to show you that no matter what you've been through, you can still be happy in Jesus Christ. And he gives you what's important in life. There's some things that are taken away. So what? But what God gives back. Oh my goodness, it's good to know Jesus. Isn't it fun being saved? Aren't you glad you know Christ? And if you don't know Jesus, look what you're missing. You could be like me. Oops. Oh, well, I hate that oops, especially when it's the brain surgeon. So I ended up going to Bible college, married to my wonderful sweetheart. Life is on a roll. And I was working at General Dynamics, making more money than I had good sense because I wasn't studying hard. My check went up. My grades dropped to below sea level. I hate that. And they told me to go take my physical. I was being inducted in the Army, and I took my letter with me. I couldn't believe it. I took my physical. It was the only exam I passed that semester. They told me I was going to be inducted in the Army, and I didn't show up the next morning. Don't look at me like that. I was a preacher's kid. I didn't want to go to war. I was too proud to go to Canada, too chicken to go to Vietnam. You know, where does a proud chicken go? Kentucky. I just thought that. Actually, I joined the Navy. That way I didn't have to serve in the military. Sorry, Navy types. That was all in fun. I joined the Navy my second day in boot camp. They said, you went to college? I said, I was flunking out of Bible school. He said, no problem. You're leadership material. That's called naval intelligence. They sent me to NAB, Naval Amphibious Base, Coronado, California, where three groups trained, the U.S. Navy SEALs, the Brownwater Black Beret, and the Special Dive Vehicle Teams. I was in the Brownwater Black Beret before I knew what hit me. I'd never been around people like that in my life. All we did was run, and fat men shouldn't run. My philosophy on running is, why? Why run when you can walk? Why walk when you can ride? Why stand when you can sit? Why sit when you can lay down? Why run when you can lay down? I figured life out. It's simple. I played football in the 9th grade, 1 down. It hurt so bad I quit and joined the band to watch the other kids get hurt. So that's the total, that's my physique. You understand me? I am not physical. They ran me till I was skinny as a rail and had to tease the hair on my legs to keep my socks up. That's real bad. And you know something? It worked. They changed my mind on things I never thought I'd be changed on. They took a simple little preacher's kid that loved everybody and turned him into something he didn't know what he was. Sent me to war. Hardest thing I ever did, kiss my wife goodbye at the airport. People said, how could you do it? I said, I puckered my lips. Now, I understand what they're saying. How could you fight in such an unpopular war? Well, I don't know. I wasn't thinking. From now on, I'm fighting popular wars. I'm going to have fun in this war. I'm not fighting it. I hate war, and you can see why. But I love freedom more than I hate war. And make no mistake, this is one Vietnam veteran. Proud to be a Vietnam veteran and proud of my country. I'm proud of my scars and stripes. Yes, sir. I mean it. I'm proud of the men I served with. God bless America. Thank you. And I can tell you that's for every veteran in the house today. That's for every, and I know you're just doing that because you mean it. God bless you. Well, they ended up sending me to Vietnam, and they flew me by helicopter into the jungle, threw out my what they call a sea bag. It's that big round tubular bag, but I don't know what you call it in other services, but in the Navy it's sea bag. Threw it out and pushed me out in that rice paddy. I slogged over and got into a Jeep waiting on me. Down this little narrow dam of dirt. And I'm thinking as the wheels are straddling it and they're working their way in toward the little village, I'm wondering, boy, where are they taking me? I would never see another city in Vietnam during that tour of duty. I never came out of the jungle. I was 8 months in there. I was wounded twice, and the second time was immense. It left me horribly disfigured. I was trying to throw a hand grenade, and a sniper opened fire, and the bullet hit my hand with the grenade just inches from my right ear. It was a white phosphorus grenade for you military people. And when it was right here, it blew, and that's why this side of my face remained. It only received second-degree burns off my clothing, but the right side of my face was stripped right down to my skull. It took 1 second. I looked down. My face was on my boots, and when I looked down, I saw it. I could see my heart beating. My back was on fire. My skin was dripping. My right hand was severed in half. These three fingers and thumb were hanging by skin on the back of my hand, and one finger was left that works. My preaching finger. Repent? These don't straighten out, but they make a good mic stand. Repent! My left thumb was blown off completely, and that really bothered me. I couldn't hitchhike. I'm kidding. They made this out of my hip. I don't know if it's a thumb or a hip. I don't suck it, I'll tell you that. I call it a thip. Well, it blew my hair off. It did. This isn't my hair. It's mine, but it was someone else's first. He was slow. And he was old, too. I'm not near as old as my hairpiece. I'm 58, but my mind, I say 40, but it's really about 19. And I have artificial parts. Got this plastic ear. I put all my parts on the bed the other day. My wife said goodnight, and I was in the other room. Now, that is a joke, and I don't tell a lot of jokes, but that's a joke. I was speaking one night. This is true now. I was in Jamaica, and I was preaching. There were thousands and thousands of people gathered, just a huge crowd. And I'm speaking, sharing my story. And at the same moment, they all did the same thing. They covered their mouth, pointed at me, sucking air like a Hoover. I hate it when that happens. Something was wrong. Well, I don't mean to be crude, but I checked my fly first. You know, I don't know. Well, it was fine. I look over. My ear had fallen off. My ear was laying on my shoulder. The glue had separated in the heat in Jamaica, and my ear was laying in plain view. They couldn't speak. Their eyes were this big. They got voodoo down there. I didn't know what to do. What do you do when your ear falls off? Well, I picked it up. I said, my ear fell off. I dried the sweat and I stuck it back on. That's worse. Now they think it's a miracle and they all got saved. I couldn't tell them it's not a miracle. It's an artificial ear. Then they'd stone me. I wouldn't be the first guy to go to Jamaica and get stoned, I hear. Oh, good second thought. I tell you what, you're about the quickest audience I've talked to in a long time. Pastor must make you think when he preaches, because you guys listen really well. But anyway, that grenade exploded right beside my ear, and it blew off half my skin. I jumped off the boat in the water. I burned in the water because phosphorus is a chemical, and it burns in water. My skin was all around me. I was beside myself. I needed to pull myself together. You know, it's really wild. I'm telling you about this devastating injury, and we're laughing our heads off. You know why? You know why you're laughing? You're laughing with me, not at me. You know why you're laughing? You're laughing because you know I'm more than a conqueror through Jesus Christ. You know it. You know I overcame by the power of the gospel of Christ, that he'd never leave us or forsake us. And though I make my bed in hell, he is there with me. It's good to laugh. It helps me laugh. I love to laugh. I think laughter is a good medicine. Isn't that what the Reader's Digest says? Well, we overdosed this morning. I swam up on the bank of the river, and I was looking at the damage, and a helicopter landed to pick me up, and they rolled me on the stretcher, and the stretcher caught on fire. It ripped open. I fell through on my head. You ever have one of those days? They got me to Saigon and then Japan. I asked for a mirror, and they brought it. It was stupid of both of us. I shouldn't have asked, and they shouldn't have brought it. And they held it over my face, and I looked up in the glass. And I saw what was left. This side of my head was skull. This side was swollen to the width of my shoulder. I could only see with one eye. I looked in there and I said, you know what? She's not going to love me. And my face started talking in the mirror. I was hallucinating on the drugs they'd given me. And my face started talking to me in the mirror and said, kill yourself. You're a half-headed freak. Your wife's a beautiful teenage girl. Get out of her misery. And the terrible thing I did, I'm so ashamed of it. I want children to hear me. Suicide is not the solution, kids. Brother Dave made a terrible mistake that day. And I can blame the drugs or whatever, but it was in me to do it because I tried it. I pulled the tube. I had no gun or knife. I pulled the tube and laid my head back, and I waited to die. And I got hungry. Wrong tube. I pulled out my lunch tube. You can die that way, but it's going to take a while. They sent me to America, to Brooke Army Medical Center, San Antonio, Texas. Put me into a little room with 13 of us all together. Guy in the bed next to mine's burned 100% third degree, no skin. His wife walked in the room, threw her ring on the bed and said, you're embarrassing. I couldn't walk down the street with you. He was the first to die. No one's ever survived 100% third degree, never. Half my skin was gone, and I was considered fatal at 30% of my skin. And up walks this beautiful, beautiful girl, most beautiful female I've ever seen in my life. She read the chart on my bed and the tag on my arm, and when she was finally convinced I was her husband, Brenda bent down and kissed what was left of my face. She looked me in my good eye and she said, I want you to know, I love you. Welcome home, Davy. And when she says, Davy, hey. I said, I'm sorry, I can't look good for you anymore. And she said, Davy, you never were good looking. Huh. It's her way of saying, I love you for who you are, not what you look like. Thank God, men. Thank God that women don't judge us by our looks. You'd be a bunch of bachelors out there. I can say, you're not very pretty to me. And thank God, pretty men make me nervous. People say, what do you do when you feel self-conscious? I say, I hang with the guys. I feel normal. Don't look at me like that, fella. You're the ugliest guy in here. And got the prettiest wife, don't you? You know why? Because she didn't judge you by your looks. She judged you by your character. You opened that door for her and you pulled that chair back and let her sit down first. That's why she loved you. You bought her flowers. All you boys out there single, listen to me, flowers. 1-800-FLOD. That's better. It's better than that little concave hairless chest of yours. So button up your shirt. And if you're broke and don't have the money for flowers, go to the cemetery. They're everywhere. I opened the door for my wife. When I left that hospital, I opened that door for her. I had to get on my knees and use my wrist to turn that knob. And she let me because she knew it was more important for me to have the dignity of being a gentleman to her than for her to open her own door and show that she didn't need me. Well, she doesn't need me. But she wants me. And that's why I love her. Drove my car and a man staring at me drove his car through a Dairy Queen. He hit the plate glass window and said, drive in. I was laughing while I was left in my head off. The light kept changing colors and the guy behind me is honking and doing strange things. And I took off. When I did, I saw the light was red. And I hit my brake and he hit me, knocked me across the intersection. I got out to apologize. Everybody at Dairy Queen thought I was drunk. Then they saw me. They thought they were drunk. I only had one eye, one ear, and one nostril. And the guy behind me, I'm trying to apologize. He's rolling up the window. I thought I'm going to tell him, look what you did to my face. But I was nice to him. I stood there kicking pieces of our headlights and taillights mixed together in a green soup out of his radiator, thinking, is this what life's going to be? Is this all there is? I'm going to cause wrecks, scare kids. Is this what life's about? It was no easy task. If you wonder why I look up, I'm watching my clock up there. But I want to tell you something. That day was the turning point of my life. Not the day I pulled the tube, not the day of my injury. Standing in that intersection was the turning point of my life. That's when I said, God, I refuse to bury my head in the sand and pretend this didn't happen or go hide my face because I'm ashamed of my scars. I fought for our liberty and I'm going to enjoy it. And I walked away from that intersection that day, vowing I'd do something with my life. When I landed in Baghdad this year, they rushed me to the green zone, trying to beat the IED casualties, those roadside bomb casualties. Five of them were arriving as I walked in. Actually ran in with those two chaplains you saw earlier on the screen. When I walked in, the doctor looked up at me and he said, he knew my name. He said, Davy, I knew you would come, only to discover he knew who I was because one of my CDs of my story had gotten to Iraq. And he saw the picture of my face on that. And he said, I knew you would come. You think I'm not on a divine mission then? Bubba, I knew I was where God wanted me. He said, pray for him. And I dropped down beside the gurney. 100% third degree, swollen twice his size. They were making 2-inch deep cuts from his shoulders to his toes, letting his body swell and split open, trying to save his life, but no one has survived it, and neither did he. And when I knelt down beside him, his breath was shallow, and I saw his head turn slightly, and I said to him, I said, son, you know this is not a hospital, don't you? I said, you're in a sanctuary, and you're not on a gurney. Son, you're on an altar, I told him. And you're on an altar, not because you're a great soldier, but because you're a sacrifice for freedom. And I told him, I said, son, I came to say thank you. I've come from the United States of America to tell you thank you. And I saw as his breath slipped through the last of his nostrils, His chest rose not again. And he gave the price for freedom. People have said to me, with the way God's allowed you to have the platform you've got today, you'd do it again, wouldn't you? I wanted to hit them. And I tell them I didn't want to do it the first time, much less do it twice. But today I stand before you and I flatly declare, if that's what it took, all that I've been through, to be able to whisper those two magnificent words to a magnificent hero, thank you, and it's the last thing he heard on earth, I would do it again in a New York minute. So help me, God. I would do it again. That means I love you in sign language, but my thumb got blown off. I speak sign language with a lisp. It means I love you. I've enjoyed being with you. I'm Dave Reaver, and I approve of this message. Thank you.